It's the middle of the week, the middle of the month, 15th of July already. Where's this summer going? Welcome back to the Sheldon McLeod Show. Sam Callio holding down fort in the studio. Hi, Sam. We're going to talk about sports. Sports economist Mosher Lander in just about 10 minutes will talk about the cost or the price of returning to ice fields and stadiums everywhere. And, oh yeah, the mortgage rates. We'll talk about those too. And that'll be coming up after one. Bank of Canada holds the interest rate right where it is at 0.25%. I don't know if you're in the market to buy or sell, but oh my goodness, the national numbers don't necessarily reflect what's happening here, so we'll talk a little bit about that today. We'll also hear from the chair of the board of Halifax Pride. Morgan Manzer will join us. This year's Pride ambassadors were announced yesterday. And they are hashtag 902 Game Changers, a trio of young people making a difference in the world. We'll talk about that. We'll also hear about, well, Atlantic Canada's gambling operations, a call for reformation. We'll talk about the new Privacy Commissioner's new report. Tricia Ralph, for the first time, will be on our show right about 1:15 this afternoon. And between 2 and 3, it's Municipal Matters. All those issues, all of the stuff that's happening in, well, I was going to say in Province House. Not a lot happening in Province House. Actually, we're not even sure if there's going to be an update for the Premier and Dr. Strang this week. It's not been confirmed nor denied, but there has been one active case confirmed. Sorry, one new case of COVID-19. There are two active cases, according to the provincial government, and they're saying the source of the infection for the new one in the central zone is being investigated. So they don't know exactly where it originated, and they are telling us it the person, that individual, is in hospital. Neither male nor female, they're not saying anything about that. But we will continue to watch that. Stay tuned, and thank you so much again for staying with News 95.7. Well, this letter was sent to Premier McNeil just the other day. Dear Premier, we are concerned Nova Scotia parents. We have appreciated your regular public updates over the past difficult months of the pandemic and your prioritization of healthcare, public health. However, we're frustrated by your government's failure to put children and the right to education squarely at the center of Nova Scotia's pandemic response. We have a couple of guests to talk with us about this issue. And the first is someone we spoke with not that long ago about his frustration, his family's personal challenges dealing with schooling from home and the lack of clarity moving forward about when or if students will be back in the classroom. And he is Derek Simon. He's back with us on the show. Hi, Derek. How are you?
Hi, Sheldon. Thanks for having me on today.
What was your role in this conversation and this letter that was drafted for the Premier's office?
I came to it somewhat late, Sheldon. So as you know, I'd written a letter of my own a month or two back and shared that online. And just gradually over the last few months, you know, different groups of parents that have been organizing at different schools have kind of gotten into contact with each other. So I had a number of people reach out to me after my letter. There's a group of parents at one of the schools in Halifax that sort of put this letter together and started sharing it with like-minded folks. So It's just sort of parents, I guess, organizing at a grassroots level in their school, starting to connect with each other and share their concerns across the province.
That's Derek Simon. And we also have on the show with us this afternoon, her name is Amy, and Amy is a farmer or runs Snowy River Farm in Cooks Brook. Amy Hill, how are you?
Hi, good. It's good to talk to you.
No, thank you for doing this. I'm curious as to why this is something that you felt important. It was important enough to, you know, add your name to the list for some clarity about what's going to happen in September.
Yeah, well, we've been, I've been mostly involved from the agriculture side of this. Rural Nova Scotia's definitely been hit hard by the lack of childcare. There are students, you know, not in school. We don't have good internet, so trying to reliably do homework online just hasn't been feasible whatsoever. So when I was contacted by some moms asking if I would lend a voice, I guess, from the rural side of things, I stepped forward because I think that we need to be bringing forward all sides of this and making sure that we are able to focus on maybe even like individual regions specifically if need be, and make sure that, you know, the smaller schools, those that can't access internet, are also being thought of, and not just the urban locations.
You know, this story is one that's happening. It's unfolding in many jurisdictions. Many provinces have announced what September will look like. Many departments of education have said this is how we plan to resume in the fall. And our Minister of Education, Zach Churchill, has said there were three options being, at least at this point, considered. Derek, what's wrong with saying let's just wait a few more weeks and then we'll know for sure based on the epidemiology?
Look, I think we all recognize that the situation is constantly evolving, and we don't know exactly what things will look like in September from an epidemiological standpoint. But you know, we're a month and a half out from the school year, and we still don't really have a broad outline of what any of those three options would look like. If it's distance learning primarily, what does that look like? What does that entail? What's the direction? How much of that is classroom time? How much is one-on-one time? How much of that is assignments that parents are going to have to help with? If it's in classroom time, you know, the minister had spoken about smaller class sizes. I still don't think we've heard much detail about how they plan on putting that into effect with the limited space and limited number of teachers we've got. So starting to get a broad outline of what each of those options looks like in the real world, you know, gives parents some reassurance about what they're looking at in September.
Derek Simon and Amy Hill on the line with us. Amy, when we talk about that uncertainty, what would be wrong with saying, I'll ask you the same question, waiting another couple of weeks? Why is this important to note today?
Well, I think it's important for parents to be able to start putting some plans in place. I know that when they announced, you know, three possibilities, that means that we had to sit down and go through every possibility. Okay, if it's going to be with strict social distancing in place, is that something that we want to put our six-year-old daughter through? You know, if it's part-time, do we have the ability to do part-time? Do we have someone that we can find to do part-time childcare for us? Is that even an option? I want to be able to put some plans in place. You know, if I need to secure daycare, that's really hard in our rural area already. So since COVID came in, it's been so much harder. So I need time to figure this out. I also want to know, what is your plan if a second wave comes? What is your plan if somebody in the school tests positive for COVID? I need to know, you know, as a parent, what do you expect the fall to look like? Not just will they go to school, but what happens if, you know, this comes back again? Are we doing a full shutdown? Does just an individual school get shut down? You know, does everybody in the school have to be tested as well as their parents? These are all things that I want to know, because, you know, if it's going to be taken away just as, you know, quickly as it's given, maybe that in my mind would be something that I would say, you know what, we're just going to go with trying to figure out homeschooling, because at this point, you know, running a small business in Nova Scotia during COVID with our kids home already is stressful enough. Trying to also think on the fly that something may just be taken away again, you know, at that point, maybe it's not an option for us to even think about.
Right. This open letter has been written to the Premier. Essentially, let's be honest, it's a letter for the rest of us. It's for the entire province. The Premier will do and his minister will do as they say see fit based on what they say will be the Chief Medical Officer of Health's recommendations. But I'm just reading a story here. In May, middle of May, Israel went back to school and they had a number of students who became infected. And in fact, they say 1,400 were infected, 47% came from infections in schools. So there is a real risk. So would it be just better to now err on the side of caution, Simon or Derek, just to say now it's just not worth the risk? Would that put your mind at ease and just say whatever we know is uncertain, so let's just not go back to class in September? Would that fit well with your plan, or would that still not satisfy you?
That would cause some real concerns. I think Amy's raised some valid points around childcare and the lack of access to childcare and how challenging that is, both in urban and rural communities, trying to find, you know, I'm in a similar situation where both my wife and I are trying to work from home. She's trying to do her job and you know, it's without childcare with the kids at home full time, that becomes really challenging. We obviously don't want to send our kids back if it's an unsafe environment, in which case we need to know what the plan is with respect to distance learning. And Amy raised another valid issue there, which is there's an equity and an access issue there too, which is, you know, I think the figure is something like 30% of kids across the province don't have access to the internet or don't have access, you know, access to broadband or access to the devices that they need to do their schoolwork. Right. And that's a bridge. That's a gap we really need to bridge. I imagine that percentage is higher in rural areas. And that more than anything needs to be addressed.
Right. And Amy, you mentioned access to high-speed internet. I know the province addressed that in some ways, or the minister did, by including some, you know, school lessons in newspapers that were distributed around the communities. Some felt that was, you know, better than nothing, but not much better than nothing. With that said, as a mom, how did you find the experience for your kids in the last, well, since March break?
We just dropped school entirely, almost, I guess. We don't have access to what I would consider high-speed internet. We certainly pay for it, but it's satellite, and it's sketchy at best. And we couldn't access most of her online learning programs that she was supposed to do. And it was becoming really stressful. She would get stressed out if she couldn't, you know, join in on a Zoom conversation with her classmates. So we tried to move as much of her learning just to on-farm learning, you know, harvesting with us and counting bunches of onions. And she would write a journal in the greenhouses and things like that. But, you know, she learns really well in the classroom, and she misses her teachers and she misses her friends. And so for us, it would be most ideal for her to be there because we're working, you know, 50, 60 hours a week on the farm. I don't actually have time to homeschool her. I'm not exactly sure what we're going to do if the program that comes out, you know, looks like it's going to be too stressful for her or it's not going to work for us. I suppose we would probably order some sort of a homeschool package, not relying on the distance learning that the school's offering, because so far it's been mainly online and we just can't access that. And I have some friends who are homeschoolers, and I think I plan to lean heavily on them for advice on how to move forward with it.
Yeah, I'm hearing from a number of parents who are saying the same thing. I guess, Amy, we'll ask you, and I'll ask you the same question, Derek. I know this letter says what you'd like to have the minister clarify. So I guess, Amy, what is your last word, your last plea to the premier or to Zach Churchill right now?
I think since March, everyone's been just living on the edge of their seats. The amount of stress that everyone is going through is just, I mean, it's unfathomable, honestly, at this point. And it's passed on to our children, too. And at this point, I would like to have some time where I can sit down and clearly think about putting a plan forward that is best for my child to make sure that she's not just, you know, being dragged along with us and maybe she'll go back or maybe she won't. And we don't know what the school system is going to look like. If I plan to send her, I want to know what it's going to look like so that I can prepare her well ahead of time for socially distancing within the classroom or, you know, apart from the classroom, maybe with her other schoolmates. You know, are they going to have gym classes? Is there going to be music? I need to know those things so that I can prepare her. And if she's not going to be going back to school, I also need to prepare her for that because, you know, she's really looking forward to seeing some of her friends that she hasn't seen since March.
Mm. And Derek?
No, I agree with Amy. The sooner we can know this stuff, the better. And so I appreciate they're trying to take the time to develop the best plan they can, but even providing us with broad outlines of what each option looks like at this point would go a long way, I think, to, you know, addressing parents' concerns or fears, making sure we have proper time to prepare our kids for the reality they're going to be facing when they go back in September. Hmm. So the sooner they can start sharing information, even if it's, you know, high level, even if it's an outline of what they're looking at, the better.
All right. Well, we will leave it at that. I'm 100% guaranteed, confident that the government knows, the ministers know, that there's a lot of urgency around this, that people really, really want to know. Amy and Derek, thank you for adding your voice to the conversation and, of course, your names to that letter.
Thank you very much.
All right. All the best.
Take care.
That's Amy Hill, a farmer who runs Snowy River Farm in Cooksbrook, a parent. Parent Derek Simon from Dartmouth, and both of whom had signed the letter, the open letter on restarting school. We're going to step aside for a few seconds to talk about sports, and I actually wanted to share this. I don't have anything specific today booked to talk about license plates and Americans, but there was a piece in the Supper News last night, and I made a comment about this after I'm trying to remember who it was that's posted. Oh, Sarah Soller had posted this yesterday. She was talking about, you know, plate shaming is bad, telling people to go home is bad. But can we just talk about, well, it's only getting media coverage now that white people are upset about being told to go back home to places where they've never lived, if that's kind of appropriate. And actually, yeah, my mother made the same comment saying, you know what, probably some learning here. It's a teachable moment for people who are, you know, if you just turned off the audio and you didn't look what was happening, it was people being judged for their appearance and, you know, their place of origin. Just throwing that out there. Sports go sports. Moshe Lander, a sports economist, resuming professional sports, but at what cost? Back after this. Well, there was an inter-squad game yesterday, and the Blue Jays won. I know. I heard the sportscast this morning. Welcome back to the Sheldon McLeod Show. Let's see. There's an NHL tournament. There's NBA talks. There's baseball, professional sports. Soccer's been going for a while in some areas of the world. Moshe Lander is a sports economist with Concordia University and at Dalhousie University. How's your summer been, Moshe?
Locked down in Montreal. Otherwise, can't complain.
Glad to have you on the show again. And I was watching a few people yesterday who were very, very concerned about, let's talk about how the NHL has come up with a plan to get back to action. Baseball is still looking like they might want to almost act like there's no pandemic on. What's your take on the back to sport plan?
You know, at the beginning of the pandemic, right, it was always epidemiology versus the economy. And in the beginning there, it was epidemiology was winning out, right? And so we shut down huge parts of the economy, of course, including professional sports. And it now seems that with a little bit of this quarantine lifting, that professional sports is in varying degrees just looking to charge ahead in some way or another just to make some money at this point. I'm not exactly sure that this is the best decision. But, you know, money talks. And so I think that's driving the bus these days.
And I won't lie, some people I've heard overheard saying, well, yeah, I'm really happy. I'm really excited. Can't wait to sit down and watch a hockey game. Others are saying, you know what, I can wait. I'm okay. I haven't had it for now, and I'm not missing it as much as I thought I would.
Yeah, it's sports gets its legitimacy from the fact that we buy into the fact that the regular season creates a seeding for the playoffs, and then the playoffs determines the champion. All of us understand as sports fans that the person who hoists the Stanley Cup or who wins the Super Bowl isn't necessarily the best team, but under the structure of the way that the sport is designed, this is what we consider to be the champion. If it's been now a little over 4 months since we've seen a hockey game, and it's probably going to be about another month before we start to see kind of hockey that counts, are we really watching something at the end there that even if they manage to make it through 3 months in Edmonton and Toronto, are we really accepting that that is the champion of the season that was interrupted 4 months ago? Or are we just watching some summer mini tournament the way that we kind of have, you know, these summer shows that come on just to kind of fill gaps? So I can understand why fans might be saying, yeah, I can wait. It's because it's, you know, do you even remember who's on certain teams or who was leading the league in goals or nobody really remembers anyway. So what are we watching other than just kind of a summer filler?
You say economics is winning out here. Is this like clearly there's no one in the stands. This isn't for bums in seats. This is for eyeballs on screens. So is this trying to just in some ways access the fact that, you know, we've all shifted our habits and we all want something to watch. And maybe that does make sense. But does it make sense economically for that reason alone?
Well, I think that, you know, usually the playoffs are kind of like the equivalent of Black Friday in terms of retailing, right? It's that point in the year where most teams cross over from being in the red into the black. And so, you know, the playoffs are usually where the teams finally make their big profits that they're expecting. The regular season is at best maybe a break even, maybe even a mild loss. If you're lucky, you get a little bit of a profit. So I think at this point, the owners have certain obligations to networks for a certain amount of broadcasting and a certain number of games that they're contractually obligated to provide. And so I think at this point, what they're really looking to do is just either minimize those losses or maybe even try and break ahead a little bit, even though they can't put bums in seats. And of course, from an advertiser standpoint, it's one of the last few ideas where advertisers are willing to pay top dollar when you can have live programming that's not time shifted,
and you know that people are watching. So it really is just kind of a basic money grab here in an attempt to try and minimize what's been a really bad sort of season financially.
Yeah, I wonder if there'll still be broadcast blackouts, considering how people are kind of frustrated about that before this whole lockdown happened. But that's another economic reason, I guess, for doing so. And if there was any question about the power of the advertiser, just look to the name change for the Washington Redskins, which was purely based on, you know, you won't get paid if you don't do this. I don't care if you didn't want to do this. Any thoughts on that big announcement earlier this week, Moja?
You're completely right. And, you know, now the eyes are going to move on from Washington, which is obviously accepted that that name is done. You know, even the owner, who's always said he will never change it, has accepted that he's going to have to change it. Where do we start focusing our attention next, right? There's the Cleveland Indians, the Kansas City Chiefs, the Atlanta Braves. You know, if you really want to start imagining what we could be looking at in terms of problems, how about the Raiders, the Pirates, the Buccaneers, the Vikings? Do we want to focus our attention on the Dallas Cowboys, the crown jewel of North American sports, and say, hey, you know, Cowboys in certain contexts have a very negative connotation, especially the way that they kind of moved west and settled the area there, sometimes with a little bit of questionable practice. You know, are we going to end up with a bunch of sports teams that are just cuddly animals and birds of prey? Or is any name they're going to be able to survive?
It is an absolutely intriguing debate. It's perfect for talk radio. And so is our guest, Moja Lander. Always grateful for our time with you. I hope you and the family are doing well in whatever this period after whatever we just went through is called. I have no idea. Everything's all upside down and all asunder. Moja Lander, thank you again for this.
Anytime. Hope to talk to you soon.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. Moja Lander helping us out here this afternoon. We're going to go into the news in just a few seconds with Steve, and then we'll check in with Clinton Wilkins. He's the senior mortgage advisor as the Bank of Canada announced it's holding steady its key interest rate. Not a huge surprise there, but you know, we'll find out what else this means to real estate, which is, if you've been looking, pretty hot. The market is really heated up. We'll discuss that with Clinton in just a few moments. And then I'm quite excited to have a conversation with the new privacy commissioner, the information and privacy commissioner. Tricia Ralph just started in the position not long ago. Her first report is out, and we'll hear from her about 1:15. You're listening to the Sheldon McLeod Show here on News 95.7.